Stop.
Welcome to the first episode of the Stop Button podcast, the continuation of the Film Response website located at www.thestopbutton.com. And this will be a presumably weekly podcast featuring audio responses of indeterminate length. Today I'll be talking about, let's see, Badge 373, directed by Howard W. Koch. Twister, directed by Jan de Bont. X2, directed by Bryan Singer. You Only Live Twice, directed by Lewis Gilbert. And The Horseman, directed by, I'm going to mispronounce his name, Jonas Åkerlund.
Badge 373 sounded good because, I don't know, it was 70s Robert Duvall. Before he was 80s and 90s Robert Duvall. You know, it was just before The Godfather, just after the first one. So I had high hopes, which were not well-founded. It's poorly written, lousy direction. I thought Howard W. Koch was somebody, I think it's because of that New York mayor. I think that because of the name, I thought that it was the New York mayor. Or the New York, you know, I mean, it's that confused why I thought this guy was a good director. He's not. I don't know if it's really a post-Dirty Harry movie. It doesn't really feel like one. I think it's inspired by a real cop who, I'm guessing, achieved some notoriety because he's credited with being an inspiration. And then he appears in the film and he's a very bad actor. But the problem with it is that it's just another one of those bigot cop movies. And there's only so much time one has for a bigot cop movie. And Robert Duvall's okay. It's certainly the worst performance I've seen from him in the 1970s, however. It's not as ludicrous as some of his 90s work. But it's certainly not some undiscovered gem that is forgotten because Paramount won't release it. Quite the opposite, I would say. There's a good reason not to release it. Trying to come up with anything else to say about the movie, but really it's boring, long, unlikable characters. It's based on the life story of the guy who, it's a French connection. There's some connection to the French, oh God. There's some connection to the French connection. But it certainly isn't in the filmmaking or in the script. Verna Bloom is in it, and I thought I liked her from something, and I have no idea what. Ooh. No. She was in High Plains Drifter, and I probably remembered that. She was in After Hours. Okay, it was After Hours I'm thinking of, but I really liked her in After Hours. I guess some of it you would have to see it to believe it, but it feels very amateurish, and Robert Duvall doesn't really belong in it. If you were full of crap and trying to promote Badge 373... I guess you could say it was some sort of 1970s American cinema verite. It's not. It's just really poorly made and looks like something that college kids would make on a Super 8, but with Robert Duvall. And I think that's about all there is to say about it. At some point during Twister, I remember Jack N. Green shot it. That's the guy who shot a bunch of Clint Eastwood's mid-90s stuff. He shot, I think he shot Unforgiven. I know he shot A Perfect World. Clint had four guys he worked with on a lot of those pictures. Then he worked with Joel Cox on editing, Henry Bumstead on production design, and Lenny Nijas, I've never heard it pronounced, so, on music. And that's changed recently. And, you know, Clint has developed as a director, which is kind of
incredible since one could argue that he had sort of peaked in the 90s just in terms of making quality films, and then all of a sudden, starting around the time of Mystic River, he just went past that. He sort of propelled himself into a stratosphere that, honestly, I don't think anyone could have even imagined. Letters from Iwo Jima being the perfect example of that. But Twister looks great. Jan de Bont's a fine director, knows how to shoot Panavision. It's really a lousy movie, lousy summer action movie. It's kind of a perfect roller coaster movie, just in terms of plotting, because there's absolutely no reason to see it again. The characters are thin, it's all special effects based. It's all very boring when they try to, you know, make them likable. Philip Seymour Hoffman's crappy in it, which is a surprise given what he went on to do. The entire supporting cast is awful, even people I like Alan Rock. I suppose Todd Field is all right. Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton are both fine. Cary Elwes is terrible. Jamie Gertz is terrible. One of the more interesting things about the film would be that Jamie Gertz wears those dark sunglasses, while Helen Hunt wears kind of see-through ones, and it's obviously so you can see Helen Hunt emote, but not Jamie Gertz, to sort of get the audience ready to dislike Jamie Gertz. But I suppose considering other action movies, Twister's not that terrible. I mean, competently made. It's got a terrible screenplay, but whatever. There's absolutely no reason to ever see it. And I can't imagine ever seeing it again. And I saw it in HD this time, so I guess I saw it as good as I'm going to see it outside of a theater. But just, I mean, I'm trying to think of some comparison. It offers absolutely nothing. I don't think if it were on in the middle of the night, it would take a lot for it to be the most compelling thing to watch. It might be good. I was drunk when I watched it. It might be good stoned, but I doubt it. I have absolutely no idea. It's so unspectacularly, boringly bad. There's just no reason for someone to watch it.
This is the third time I've tried to record an X2 audio post, audio capsule. I haven't decided what to call them yet. I'm even thinking about switching the stop button entirely over to a podcast. For new material. I haven't really decided yet for plenty of reasons. But X2, the first time I recorded it, it went long. The second time I had trouble filling 5 minutes, so now I've got no idea how long I'm going to go through on this third attempt that hopefully will produce workable audio. I was distracted by the idiotic trivia section for the movie on IMDb. But it's nice to have this information in front of me so I can kind of go through the list of who's worst in this movie. Actually, I mean, that's not even interesting. X2 is one of the worst movies I've ever sat through, if not kind of the worst. I think the Harry Potter I sat through is worse, but only because it was longer. My thing about X-Men United, was it's from the makers of Superman Returns, which is a very classy movie. It does have some problems with kind of some casting problems, but only one. Lois Lane and, I guess, arguably Kevin Spacey. Not that many people would see that, and Spacey was good in the previews anyway. So, X-Men 2, you've got Michael Dougherty, Dan Harris on the screenplay, and Bryan Singer directing it, and Singer does a lousy job. Again, it looks like it was filmed in Canada.
on a very restricted budget, and it just appears goofy and cheap. The story is idiotic. More than idiotic, you're watching it and you can't figure out how this is, because X2 does not focus on Wolverine like the first one did, so instead it focuses more on the bad guy, I guess. Maybe, kinda, not really. There's no good split between how the action works between characters. Patrick Stewart disappears for a while, so does James Marsden. And there is one good scene, well, one scene with promise, and that is when Hugh Jackman's talking with Anna Paquin's boyfriend, and it's an awkward kind of moment because Hugh Jackman would be her crush meeting. It's a very awkward scene, and it has a lot of promise, and it doesn't really fulfill any of it, but it's not as bad as most of the film. There's actually no good performances in it, which is kind of disappointing. The guy who plays Iceman, Sean Ashmore, gives one of the better performances, and Bruce Davidson, I guess. Hugh Jackman's not good in it, as opposed to the first one where he sort of broke out as this Hollywood star. You know, the first kind of star like that in years. I think that Hugh Jackman's success in X-Men as sort of leading man material, the only other person recently I can think of that broke out of an ensemble cast like that as leading man material would have been Harrison Ford in the first Star Wars. Patrick Stewart's bad. Halle Berry's bad. Famke Janssen's less bad than them, but still bad. Ian McKellen's not as bad as he was in the first one, but he's still lousy. Anna Paquin's no good. Brian Cox is awful. Alan Cummings is awful. They got Cotter Smith to play the president, and you kind of, I mean, he just, you know, I like Cotter Smith from the show Equal Justice, I think it was called. Now that's what ought to come out on DVD. Yeah, Equal Justice. That was a good show. There's something very Canadian about Cotter Smith, though. Like, he was born in Washington, D.C., but I don't see that when I look at him. Instead, I see a guy who looks like he was born in Canada, and he seems cheap. Their music's bad. Special effects are bad. I watched it in HD, and I thought the HD would be a draw to it, but it wasn't, because there's really no dynamic filmmaking. Oh, some quick things I did want to not forget, and that I've tried not to forget the two other times I've recorded this. The scene where Wolverine kills all the army guys is kind of amazing, because the army guys are the bad guys. They are killing kids and that kind of thing. And this is a move from 2003, demonizing the U.S. Army, which is kind of ballsy, and it was a big hit, which I guess kind of makes it subversive. I'd never heard of this scene before, but it's just gratuitous. It's great. And then there's the scene where the army pilot can fly around Storm's tornadoes, and that doesn't really make any sense, because there would be no way to simulate in training the army pilot having to fly around artificially created tornadoes, which is very silly. There would be no way for her to train for that. I mean, maybe there is like a simulator where you train for that, but it's very interesting that they lionize the Air Force, I guess, while demonizing the Army. Like I said, I haven't heard anything about that. But it's a piece of crap, and the amazing thing about it is it's actually worse than I thought it was going to be, and I assumed it was going to be a really big piece of crap. My wife walked out on, what's it called? Not Never Say Never Again. Not Tomorrow Never Dies. You Only Live Twice. She got up and left about 40 minutes in, and I finished it because I figured 40 minutes is kind of halfway. And
I kind of figured 40 minutes is halfway, so I can make it. And it was a very tough thing to make it through the rest of You Only Live Twice. It's memorable, I guess, because of the beginning where James Bond dies, and that's an interesting scene, even though it's never really explained and why they would do that then instead of doing it before. The timing, because it wasn't like he was on a K. Anyway, so that's memorable, the burial at sea. And then there's the scene with, the ninjas. The ninjas are kind of memorable, but not specifically, because it's a lame scene. What kind of stunned me about the movie was how sexist it was. And for a James Bond movie to be sexist, it really has to be really sexist. And I think the things that bugged me the most were the lack of distinguishable personalities for the two female leads, I guess we'd call them, the two Japanese actresses who were both in King Kong versus Godzilla. Let's see, the scene where James Bond's Japanese counterpart makes a nasty remark about Moneypenny and Bond doesn't defend her. That seemed wrong, considering that, you know, it's Moneypenny. And then also the scene where it seemed like Bond was going to bomb out on a mission because he didn't think he was getting a pretty fake wife. So there's some cool sets at the end. I mean, it's kind of amazing how big Pinewood Studios is. I can't think of any other movie except maybe Eyes Wide Shut that made it seem so big. Certainly not the famous 80s examples of Aliens and Batman. Trying to think here. Sean Connery's bored. Lewis Gilbert's direction's lousy. And I got excited when I saw Gilbert's name because he made Haunted, which was very effective, and apparently he learned all of his subtlety later in his career. It's goofy. It seems like an Austin Powers movie, and I think I've only seen the first Austin Powers movie. I can't really think of anything. The music's okay. There's a really good scene with a helicopter, action sequence with the helicopter. That's good. But it lacks any movement because he basically just hangs out in Japan. It's really dumb. And it's boring me even to talk about it. And I really did not think I would dislike it more than I disliked Thunderball. But I did, because Thunderball at least had some redeeming qualities to it.
I would imagine that a serial killer movie has to be pretty bad for it not to be watchable. For whatever reason, it's emerged as a genre of maybe unparalleled success in the last 30 years. I can't think of a pre-1970 serial killer movie, but certainly this hunt for the serial killer. It's very popular, especially in the 90s and early 2000s with those crappy Ashley Judd, Morgan Freeman movies. Didn't they make a couple of those? I don't know the last time I saw a serial killer. Zodiac, obviously, I saw in the theater, but before that, I don't remember the last one. So The Horseman went direct-to-video with Dennis Quaid and I'm going to mispronounce Xi Jing's name. What surprised me about it was it's a Platinum Dunes production. Those are the guys who remake Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Friday the 13th, and they're now remaking Nightmare on Elm Street, and they remade the Amityville Horror, I think. That was them. It's Michael Bay's side project when he's not doing Transformers movies. so I guess they don't have a firm distribution deal with Paramount or whoever. It's kind of unfortunate that I'm going to mispronounce this guy's name too. Jonas Åkerlund, who directed a bunch of music videos. He's fine. He's pretty good. I imagine if he'd had a better script, he would have made a better movie. The Horseman's kind of... maybe if it were a TV pilot, it's very predictable. It's kind of well-paced. It only runs 90 minutes, but it's decently paced. Things start to fall apart about halfway through when the dynamic changes and Dennis Quaid is sort of facing off with, going to pronounce her name wrong again, Ji Jing. And she's in the Hannibal Lecter role, kind of, and yeah, she really can't do that. But it's strange how it's almost in vignettes. Almost. Not really. The script's kind of incompetent in terms of presenting itself. But there's a small sequence with Patrick Fugit from Almost Famous that's good. He's really good. And Paul Dooley shows up for a little while, and he and Dennis Quaid have a Breaking Away reunion, but I can't remember if Paul Dooley and Dennis Quaid had any scenes together in Breaking Away. But they kind of, it's clear they cast people without really thinking about, they went for certain name recognition and certain not. I mean, Peter Stormare's in it, and he's awful. I mean, he's, might not be his worst performance. This is the guy from Fargo. Woodchopper guy from Fargo. And since then, he has just hacked out every performance he can. So it's kind of like that. But not quite as convincing as Armageddon when he played the nutty Russian cosmonaut, didn't he? But it's a dumb family drama with Quaid and his two sons. Quaid's okay-ish. He's not really good, but he's not terrible. It kind of reminded me of 88 Minutes, that Al Pacino serial killer movie, only in that you have these actors who shouldn't be making serial killer movies. And it got me thinking about how about 10 years ago with Savior, Quaid was on a trajectory towards sort of a creative, artistic relaunch. And it didn't happen, and I couldn't remember why. Like if some movie had failed or something. And then I realized that that was right around the time of his divorce from Meg Ryan, and so you have to figure it was a personal thing. But seeing him in this, it certainly suggests he should be on a good TV show at this point in his career, because if he's making direct-to-video serial killer movies, this is the kind of thing that is definitely beneath him, but it's doesn't. Quaid's sort of a leading man who never became a star. I don't know how to describe it. He was always on the cusp through the mid to late 80s and early 90s, and it just seems like this kind of tripe is a bad choice. Who's really good is Clifton Collins Jr. is the cop sidekick. And one of the more interesting things is the hairstyles. Both he and Quaid have kind of these late 70s cop movie hairstyles and costumes, and that's kind of cool. And if there were, I hesitate to say another 15 minutes to this movie, but if someone of some quality had come in and rewritten the script while they were shooting and already had it cast, I'm sure the final product would be far better. It's kind of, it's an awkward film too, because Quaid doesn't have the star power to be a draw, and it's not gory enough to sort of appeal to the mainstream attempt to duplicate the success of Hostel. I'm thinking of Death Sentence, where you have Kevin Bacon, who's probably had some direct-to-video releases or limited ones. And so, you know, let's put him and Quaid on the same level here. The difference was Death Sentence was, it was supposed to be very gory. I think it was. But the thing is that Horseman seems to promise that, but doesn't deliver it. And also by casting going to say her name wrong again. Xi Zhang. It's not a very dynamic clash of intellects. She's not up to snuff for that. I don't really know what actress in that age range would be. I'm sure Rose Byrne could have done it with some rewrites, but it just seemed inexplicable how this script made it through to be one of Platinum Dunes' first original productions. Because, you know, they seem to have had hits with everything else. There's really nothing technically superior about it. The cinematography is decent. Eric Brahms, you know, with this director, I figured he wasn't going to get a bad cinematographer. A lot of the film relies on Lou Taylor Pucci as Quaid's son, his older son, who sort of has taken over as head of household, which is kind of inexplicable because Quaid's always around, but apparently he's supposed to not be around, but we never get to see that. Pucci has a lot of the weight on him, and he sort of comes off as ineffectual. Not bad, just not really an actor of the caliber required. And then, you know, they got Fugit in the movie, and you're wondering why they didn't just try and maybe get Fugit to play the son, because he doesn't really look old enough to not. I mean, he doesn't look any older than the other guy. So, you know, I was expecting to turn it off, but it was, like I said, a solid serial killer thing. I'm sure if they produced it as an HBO pilot, you could have had series with, well, maybe not HBO, but whatever. You could add a whole series with Quaid as this guy or something. Maybe that's what he should do. Thank you for listening to the first episode of the Stop Button Podcast. The website is still available at www.thestopbutton.com.